Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Nick Nizar.
Welcome to Canucks Central. Day 3 of Canucks training camp. Yeah, it's back. If you hadn't already known, hockey gonna be here pretty soon. Just over 2 weeks away till August 1st when games resume. We know the exhibition game will come just days before that as well. But as we get ready for more hockey return, lots of news happening, not just at training camp, but off the ice as well. I'm Vic Nizar. With me is Jamie Dodd. You hear him on the Scott Rintoul show, producing there. And it's been a busy couple of days, Jamie. We'll get right into it because the Canucks yesterday announcing the signing of Jack Rathbone, a prospect that many people have been excited for and wanting to see. And the young D-man now joins us on the line. First things first, Jack, congratulations. And what have the last 72-some-odd hours been like for you?
Thank you, guys. They've been a little crazy. It's definitely a tough process, but it's an exciting one. So me and my family have kind of just been trying to soak it all in the past 24, 48 hours. And but it's been great to be able to kind of share this moment with my mom and dad, and sister and brother. It's definitely a cool feeling and one I won't forget.
What's the first thing you do after you sign? Like, you put pen to paper, it goes away. What's the first thing you guys did?
I think I hugged my mom and dad. And then my brother and sister, and we ended up going out to dinner, and but it was fun.
Jack, a lot of Canucks fans, you know, have been watching you since you've been drafted by the team, following your development. How would you describe your style of play and what you think you can bring to the club?
I'd say I'm more of an offensive defenseman, but always something that I'm trying to work on in terms of rounding out my 200-foot game. But, yeah, I love to play with speed and try and make a good first pass and then be that fourth forward in terms of jumping up and trying to create offense. But, yeah, I'd say those are kind of my strengths. But, you know, always something to work on, and I'm excited to get to work here soon.
Yeah, you mentioned the offensive upside to your game, and you know, you spent 2 years playing at Harvard, very productive years from a point production standpoint. How would you say your game developed over the course of those two seasons playing at Harvard?
Yeah, I think just from kind of a maturity standpoint and just learning to kind of feel out a game was pretty big for me. I was, especially moving from prep school to college, being able to come into a coaching staff like Coach Donato, Coach Tortorella, and Coach Marcoux was something that I was really excited about. And I knew just with the video work and all the extra hours that they were able to put in with me on the ice, whether that was before or after, was something that I knew was going to help my game and try and, again, mold me into that 200-foot defenseman that I hope to be one day. But, yeah, I think just everything about my game developed there, and I can't thank him enough.
Join with Jack Rathbone, latest Canucks signee here on Canucks Central. Jack, you know, you talk about how the college experience there really benefited for you. How much did the college hockey season, the upcoming one, its cancellation impact your decision?
Yeah, I think it was pretty big. I mean, it's definitely still up in the air, but I think kind of that uncertainty, I wanted to know that I was going to play and develop this year. And my family and I decided right now was the right time. And I'm excited for the opportunity.
When you weigh all of that, like, was school a factor of it? Was it just location? You know, what stood out for you on the flip side of that decision? Instead of going pro, what were the draws to staying in if you wanted to?
Yeah, I think they basically were going to move to online classes for the entire year is what kind of they were looking at in terms of an academic plan. So I think that was definitely a factor in it. And then obviously from a hockey standpoint, I knew that say we weren't going to play. I knew that the best thing for me to develop and try and grow as a player was to sign and become a pro and kind of commit to making that jump and bet on myself here.
Where do you feel you are as far as would have been great to have another year developing, of course, but you know, do you feel like you're ready to take that step into the pros, or do you feel like maybe, you know, a bit of development time at say the AHL? I mean, obviously it's the pros, I just mean the big leagues. Do you feel like a little weathering in the AHL might be best for you? Or do you, like, where do you feel like your game is in relation to the NHL?
Yeah, I think, because I signed it and my family and I made that decision, I think my game was ready to kind of translate to being a pro, and, there's always room to grow and develop, but I'm going to try and go into camp and try and make that decision hard for management and coaches and try and earn that roster spot. And, I'm excited for the opportunity to try and do that.
Jack, a couple of your former teammates at Harvard made very successful jumps to the NHL this year. John Marino and Adam Fox enjoyed a lot of success with their teams. Did seeing them do that give you more confidence that you were ready to make the leap as well?
Definitely. Playing with those guys just a year ago was, I mean, going to the rink with guys like that every day was, I think, another thing that helped me just in terms of developing as a player. But yeah, seeing how kind of seamless their jump was to the next level was pretty cool, and definitely gave me a little bit more confidence in myself and knowing that I could do that too.
Hey, you know, we talked a little bit about your development at Harvard and how your game has changed in the 2 years you've been there, but it's a pretty impressive run of defensemen from one program, you know, yourself, John Marino, Adam Fox. What is it, do you think, about the program there that makes it so successful, not just developing players, but specifically defensemen who are ready to move on to the NHL?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's coaching and the way I know Coach Pearl was there for a little bit with Adam and John, but now it's Coach Tortorella there. But I think just the whole staff, just they want you to – they recruit you for a reason. They let you use your talents in the way that you should. I think most of those guys are kind of a little bit more of an offensive upside. So they're good to kind of give you that free rein and let you play that kind of fast, get up and go hockey. But they're definitely on you in terms of always trying to round out that 200-foot game. But yeah, I think the way they coach, I think that was in way they develop guys. It's pretty cool to watch from a first-hand perspective. And that's one of the major reasons why I wanted to play for Coach Nonato and Coach Tortorella.
Listen to Sportsnet 650, home of the Canucks, Canuck Central, Bick Nazar and Jamie Dodd, talking to the latest signee, Jack Rathbone. We talked about the development at college. What influence did the Canucks have? And just curious, your communication levels between you and the organization over the past few years?
Yeah, it's they've been great, especially, you know, you got Chris Higgins and Ryan Johnson and all the local scouts there, Vinny Montalbano and Jonathan Bates have been great to me just in terms of trying to be an asset and be a resource that I can reach out to whenever I want, just in terms of whether it's video or just questions, what they think I can work on, what they think I'm doing well, kind of just being in that dialogue with them throughout the season, but at the same time, giving me my space to try and just play my game was a relationship that I cherished for the past 2 or 3 years from high school to college. And now really excited to continue that onto the pros.
Has anything been expressed to you of where you might play next year?
No. I'm just excited to try and go in and compete for that roster spot and try and make the team. But it's the best league in the world, and it's my dream, so I'm going to do whatever I can.
Jack, you know, we know you had the option of using your last year of eligibility at Harvard and becoming a free agent next year and having your pick of which NHL team you wanted to sign with. You sign with the Canucks, and I'm curious, you know, fans here in this city are really excited about some of the young players in place on this team. Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, Brock Besser, to name a few. Did that factor into your decision, the chance to join what looks to be a very, very exciting group of young players here in Vancouver?
Yeah, I think definitely. It's a really exciting time for hockey in Vancouver. And I mean, it's the passion that all the fans have in a Canadian market was something that I definitely thought was a bonus and a positive, and definitely factored into my decision. But I'm really excited where I'm at and can't wait to get started.
You got a few friends on the team. I saw Thatcher put a Instagram post saying of you guys back in the day. You got any more friends on the team?
I know Quinn, just we were roommates at development camp, and but yeah, that's about it. I've known Thatcher for a while now, but those two are about it.
What is it about that like that northeastern USA, right? Because in Canada we talk about the Ontario hockey community or Saskatchewan. Seems like there's a lot of guys coming to that northeastern recently, that area, that are just really thriving. There's a pretty tight hockey community there.
Very, yeah, I'd say even just the Boston area, I'd say it's an extremely tight hockey community. And you always say the hockey world's small, but once you kind of boil it down to that northeast region, it's even tighter. And yeah, I think it was a cool place to grow up and play hockey. And yeah, it was awesome. It was a great environment and great atmosphere. Every time you go to the rink, it feels like you know everybody in the rink. So it was a blast.
You know, you mentioned you were roommates with Quinn Hughes. I'm sure since he plays for the Canucks, the team that drafted you, you've been following his rookie season. How impressed have you been with what he was able to do in his first year in the NHL?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, it's fun to watch. He's one of those guys that made that transition look pretty seamless, and it's pretty cool to watch. I think for someone to do that in college and then almost seem like he didn't even hitch when you get to that level, it's pretty cool to see, and I'm really happy for him.
Hey, quick question. What were you studying in Harvard? It was psychology, right?
Yep.
You got, what's your plans to finish that up now?
So this upcoming school year, like I said, it's going to be online. So depending on when training camp is, I should be able to try and get a few credits in for this first fall term. And then obviously once hockey starts up, that's the focus. And then every summer I'll be able to come back and kind of take some classes and try and get as many credits as possible to try and work towards that degree. And it's definitely something that was important to me and something that was important to my family. So it's another commitment that I'm going to have to, and a promise that I'm going to have to honor with my dad and my mom.
Jack, just before we let you go here, I mean, it's not every day that we get a Harvard student or a Harvard alum on the program here. So I got to ask, you're studying psychology. Was there a specific favorite class you took in your time at Harvard that really stuck out with you?
I'm in one right now. It's pretty interesting. It's just their basic kind of intro to psychology course. And I took one last semester that was just social psychology, but they're all kind of credits that I need in order to get this this degree. But everyone so far has been interesting and kind of enjoyed it in my own way.
Jack, we'll get you out on this. What's your sense of what it'll be like to play in a Canadian market?
I can't wait. I mean, being around Boston, you know, it's a pretty hectic around here in terms of just the sports environment. You've got the Pats, you've got the Red Sox and the Bees, but I'm excited to get up there, and the fans are unbelievable. The passion they've shown, even just at the couple of development camps that I've been to, it's pretty cool. And I'm ready to see that kind of ratchet up a notch once I get there.
He is Jack Rathbone, the latest member of the Canucks organization, officially signed as of yesterday. Jack, again, congratulations from all of us, and looking forward to seeing you here soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
He is Jack Rathbone here on Canucks Central, the home of the Canucks on Sportsnet 650. A lot to take away from there. And again, highlighting the relationship that he's built with the area scouts for the Canucks organization and the player development staff as well. with Chris Higgins and Ryan Johnson. Again, what happens moving forward? This is a big domino that Canucks needed to drop. And you know, kudos to Jim Benning and the crew. I know it's hard to give credit to. It's like, oh, you signed your own draft pick. How much credit should you get? But look, these NCAA players, they have options. And to close the deal on it, you've got to give a little bit of credit to the management staff for doing so.
Oh, yeah, there's absolutely. And, you know, you can debate how much credit they deserve for the reasons you said, but it's not a default. It was 100% going to happen. It's a layup. That's not what it was. There was, and I know you guys had Elliot Friedman on the program yesterday explain that, especially for Canadian teams, this can be a tricky proposition sometimes. So, yeah, it's a good piece of business for the Canucks. There's no doubt about that.
And it speaks to now the future of the team, where he slots in next year. I know a lot of people say, oh, he could make the team next year. That would be a good problem to discover for the Canucks. I don't know necessarily if you write that in and say, hey, he's going to be on our third pairing. Let's start building the rest of the roster. And like, we've solved this issue here on our third pairing, and we can start moving forward. If he beats someone out, awesome. How you structure it for the next season remains to be seen. But when you look at the future, Jamie, so not the 2020-21 season, but the 2021-22 season, you kind of have four pillars already sorted out. Like Brogan Rafferty, you would think, is on the team next year, could stay around. Quinn Hughes, obviously going to be around. Tyler Myers going to be around. And now Jack Rathbone. There's an expectation that four of the six spots get taken up in a season away.
And there's still big question marks about Jack Rathbone and Brogan Rafferty. I'm someone who's high on both of them, but yes, until you see them do it at the NHL level, yeah, you can't necessarily pencil them in. But the plan, you know, if everything goes according to plan, it's a good one. And you've got those options, and you're not, you know, from an organizational perspective at this time, you don't have to be scrambling for ideas. You're not looking at the depth chart saying, oh man, how are we going to fill it out in a couple of years? You have options that have a reasonable chance of working out in those slots.
And it's also about affording them the opportunity to grow into it. And that's why we've talked about it with Chris Tanev, who's an older player, probably not going to take a one-year deal. I would be surprised. And you've at some point got to open up the space for not even just these two, but okay, where's Jet Wu? Where's Olio Levy? Again, like I'm skeptical, but at some point the spaces need to get opened up. And who else are you bringing in a year's time? Are you going to be using free agency? Are you going to go into the trade market, right? So when you start looking at the guys you actually do like, and we do project to actually at least play NHL games, whether they are successful or not, like the Rafferty's or Rathbones of the world, again, we're high on them, but it remains to be seen. These spaces need to get carved open. And that's why when we talk about the future of the defense, you kind of have to look beyond just Chris Tanev and Troy Stetcher of, oh, how do you get this solved for next year? It's not just a one-year issue. It's hey, if you commit to those guys, there's guys coming behind them that are now going to be ready at some point to play NHL games.
Well, and that's why the term for these contracts is going to be so important, even more important, arguably, than the AAV of them, although obviously that will be really important too, just to make sure, you know, the Canucks don't have enormous cap problems going into next year. But you're right. I mean, they've got guys coming. You can't just lock into this defensive group because it's what you have on hand right now. You're going to have to take a risk at some point. And that will mean walking away from one of, you know, Chris Tanev or Troy Stetcher. That's probably a reality this offseason. And it could come down to, you know, who can you get on a shorter term deal? Can you get Troy Stetcher because he's an RFA on a one-year, you know, wait and see and market develops better next year kind of deal? Can you get Chris Tanev on a one-year deal? Probably not. So that could be kind of the deciding factor, because finally the Canucks are in a position with this latest signing that they actually do have a little bit of defense depth coming in and pushing some of the guys who are in the lineup already.
And I should stress, Alexander will still be here in a season's time, obviously, but in that scenario, okay, he is a UFA, I guess, at that stage, but it feels like he's on the year to year, we'll de-escalate your AAV and figure it out as we go along plan. And one thing that kind of stands out now, of those four guys, so again, if you want to project in 2 years' time or two seasons' time, because the calendar's all screwy considering where we are, Rathbone, Rafferty, Hughes, Myers, right? Let's just assume in a world all four are on the team, not top four, just in their slots. There's kind of a trend emerging of what you may see of this Canucks D, and think of Jet Wu also in this conversation. Mobility, right? This is no longer the bruising, hey, we chased Eric Goodbranson, we want guys to just move people in front of the net. I know Tyler Myers is huge, but his primary ability, his primary attribute is his mobility. He's very fleet of foot. And you start looking at how this is growing and perhaps where they may target, whether a free agency or via the trade market, mobility is emerging as the primary resource that they're looking for in these D-men.
Mobility and the ability to make an outlet pass, I think.
Yeah.
The passing ability is huge as well, especially you look at Brogan Rafferty.
Playing fast, right?
Yeah, exactly. You can play fast. You can contribute to the speed of the team with your ability to pass, with the ability to make clean breakouts out of your own zone. You know, we talk so much about Quinn Hughes' skating ability, and it's incredible. It's probably his best skill, but don't forget, he's a great passer as well. And I think, you know, from what we've seen of Jack Rathbone, he has both skills in his bag too. He can break out carrying the puck. He can break out with a nice outlet pass. Those are kind of the key things. And with a player like Brogan Rafferty, in some ways, I think he exemplifies that kind of philosophical shift more than anyone, because you could easily project Brogan Rafferty as a bottom pairing defenseman. And traditionally that has been a spot for the big, bulky, strong, physical stay-at-home guys. And if the Canucks are willing to take a Brogan Rafferty, who's not small, but who makes his, you know, living on the ice with his passing ability, with his skating, with his offensive potential, if they're willing to take a player like that and use him on the bottom pairing and be comfortable with him there, that really shows you how far not just the Canucks have come, but how far the NHL has come, where you don't need to fit that old school archetype to play on the bottom pairing now. You know, you can be a pass first kind of guy, and the teams will recognize your value. They know that you have to have, you know, skilled defensemen, good skating defensemen on every pairing at this point.
And it's kind of merging the philosophy of your roster and perhaps your best players. And I kind of want to expand on this because something happened in the NFL yesterday with the Kansas City Chiefs that I want to kind of get into a bigger team building and catering to your star players philosophy discussion. And I think what we're talking about here kind of merges into Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes a little bit. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. Plus, hey, big news from the Calder race. We know the finalists. I know you already know Quinn Hughes is in there. We'll let you know who the other guys are. You know what? You already know Cale Makar's in there. We'll let you know who the third guy is in just a little bit and get into that discussion here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back, Canucks Central. Vic Nizar, Jamie Dodd here on the home of the Canucks. I just spoke to Jack Rathbone, and we were talking about, Jamie, the building out of this Canucks defense, how, you know, very slick, very mobile, very quick, you hope, defensive crew in 2 years' time with Rathbone, Hughes, obviously, Myers, his skating ability, Brogan Rafferty, potentially. And the point I was kind of making is, you kind of have to build it in the image of your best players, right? It's great to just like, oh, this guy's, you know, really strong and that's valuable, but you kind of want all the pieces to work in concert together. And I was looking at the Kansas City Chiefs. They make a signing yesterday. They signed one of their own guys, a pass rusher, Chris Jones, and big money. And they've already given big money to another pass rusher. And they've, of course, got Patrick Mahomes. So when I think of, okay, why they're giving out all this money to certain guys and how they are building their franchise, it's everything has to do with that Mahomes character. So what do they draft? They draft a quick running back who can catch a lot of passes and fit in that mold. And you think of how they want to play the game. They want to score a lot of points. And what happens when you're up with a lead? You need pass rushers. So they've dedicated a lot of resources to pass rushing. So that's the way they want to play. How do the Canucks want to play? With Elias Pettersson, right, leading the way. Think of the high IQ processing speed that he has, able to get into right areas constantly. We see how slick he is with the puck, both deking, and think of how creative he is with his passing of, can you get to a spot? I will find you if you can get to that spot. And now try to be more free-flowing amongst the other four guys on the ice. If you have Demon, that can be a part of that. And Chris Tanev mentioned that when he joined the Scott Rintoul show, just about operating as a five-man unit in the offensive zone more this year with Quinn Hughes being on the team. So when you think of those two guys, you kind of need to start building a roster around those two, more so than just evaluating the players.
Yeah, you do. And it's interesting because, you know, we've seen, let's say it this way, the Canucks roster this year isn't necessarily totally built in the style that those guys play.
Not yet, but we've seen
that even despite that, you know, you can still have success with those players. Well, now if you have that style more consistently throughout the lineup, that should benefit you even more because, you know, if you have a guy, let's say Jack Rathbone in a couple of years has panned out really well and he's on the left side in your second pairing. Well, then you're going when Quinn Hughes comes off the ice and Jack Rathbone hops over the board, you're not getting a total shift in the style of play. And you got to think that that makes it easier for the forwards to say, okay, hey, we're just going to go out and do the same thing we were doing when Quinn Hughes was on the ice because we have a similar player in Jack Rathbone. And I'm not saying Rathbone is going to be as prolific or, you know, exactly like Quinn Hughes, but just in broad strokes, defensemen who like to activate, who like to carry the puck, who can make a really slick pass, who are involved offensively, they both fall into that archetype. And yeah, having that consistency up and down your lineup should be a very, very good thing for the Canucks going forward.
And then figure the interesting part of a guy like Pettersson and Miller, Horvat to some extent, because he's got that understanding to do so, of being aware defensively. So when these guys activate, when they try to get into the play in the offensive zone, the kind of half-court offense, you got to be willing to cover for them, right? And when you've got the awareness that, say, Pettersson, Miller, those guys have of, okay, Quinn Hughes is going on a bit of a run. I've got to just make sure he's covered. There's a willingness to do that. And it's that give and take that is really interesting that I don't know if has been explored enough in hockey, but we're getting to that point because of these D-men, the Quinn Hughes, the Rasmus Dahlins, Cale Makar. We talk of them as the fourth forward that are responsible defensively. It has to work in concert with everything else. And you've got to have forwards who are willing to sacrifice a little bit of down low time to cover for them.
Yeah, that's one of the things that when people talk about, okay, what are the next trends in hockey? What's hockey going to look like in 5 years, in 10 years? That's one of the things that comes up consistently is the idea of moving to, if not completely positionless hockey, then something a lot closer to positionless hockey than we have now. And you're right. The focus is usually on the defenseman and, you know, okay, your defensemen have to be skilled. They have to be able to carry the puck. They have to be able to chip in offensively, but it does go both ways because if you have, you know, one or even both of your defensemen jumping up in the play, yeah, that's very valuable. But if your forwards don't know what to do in the defensive zone, don't know how to rotate and cover a spot on the blue line, don't know how to back check effectively, that's going to be a big problem. And it might just wipe out all the gains that you get as a result of having those, you know, modern style defensemen on your roster.
Yeah, the spacing of it is all important. Essentially, you're still going to have three guys down low, two guys up high, but it's how do you manipulate the defenders to get into the space to create the advantages that you want to, you know, scoring opportunities and still be responsible. It's similar to soccer to some degree. We see all these crazy formations like a 3-5-2, 3-3-4-1, whatever it is. Essentially, when you're without the ball, everyone kind of forms into that classic 4-4-2. So we can talk about, oh, defensemen activating and trying to create havoc. Responsibly, it still looks like three guys down low, two guys above the other five guys. And so they kind of keep it all in check. You've got to be able to have that give and take and play it right and play it safe. You know, responsible aggression.
What was it called in soccer, right? Total soccer, right? That was, or total football. That was the Johan Cruyff in the Netherlands, right? Yeah. Every player on the field should be able to do every job on the field. And, you know, that we're getting slowly in fits and starts to that point in hockey where you're not going to panic if one of your forwards is, you know, the one of the guys back on a 2-on-3 odd man rush. You should have some level of confidence that he can handle that. And you're definitely not going to panic if you're going the other way and you have a defenseman who is, you know, leading a 2-on-1 charge, because you should have some degree of confidence that he's not going to make a mess of that situation.
What's interesting about Rathbone too, we'll wrap it up with this. You kind of posed the Adam Fox, John Marino guys who, A, got afforded an opportunity and blew the doors down. Fox, I think, had a lot more hype. Marino, not so much. But when you watch those Penguins games, man, he and Marcus Pedersen did a lot to kind of save their season to some degree, because that blue line, we've seen Jack Johnson play, we've seen Erik Branson play, it wasn't going to work out. And those two guys, and Marino specifically, was such a delight for them, because he stabilized so much and he brings enough offense and he has enough of defensive responsibility. And when you talk about those three guys from Harvard now, Rathbone being the third, I feel like that's unfair expectations, but it's on the spectrum of possibilities that he could wind up in, as soon as next year, you know, featuring.
It definitely is on the spectrum of possibilities. And what's the trend we've seen? I want to talk about those guys specifically in a second here, but, you know, just in general, the trend we've seen in the NHL is it doesn't really matter what age you are. It doesn't really matter what league you're coming from, how much experience you have, man. If you're ready to play, you're going to get your shot and you're going to be ready to make an impact. We know that better than any market, I think, here in Vancouver, what we've seen over the last three seasons with rookies coming into the league. So there's really no reason that Rathbone can't compete for a spot and can't be a valuable player for the Canucks next year. And just to the back to the point of John Marino and Adam Fox. So first of all, both of those guys were drafted by Western Canadian teams. John Marino was drafted by the Edmonton Oilers. He ends up playing in Pittsburgh. Adam Fox was drafted by Calgary. They knew they weren't going to sign him. They trade him to Carolina. He ends up signing in New York. So that just gives you a little bit more context when people talk about, oh, Jim Benning doesn't deserve any credit for signing Jack Rathbone. There's a track record of players in a similar situation that has not worked out for the team in question. So you do have to give a little bit of credit. And then you mentioned John Marino and what kind of a revelation he was. And he's a really interesting case why you always have to be, you know, a little bit smart when you call up Hockey DB and you look at what a player produced points wise in college and you try to project that to the NHL. You know, he had in his last year at Harvard, he had 11 points in 33 games, which is, you know, not very remarkable. And that's not a stat line that screams this guy is ready to go to the NHL. And I think it's an important reminder that you always have to take in consideration what's his role at Harvard or in the NCAA. Who is he playing with? Is he getting power play time? How much ice time is he getting? Because he immediately went to the NHL and all of a sudden, you know, produced more offensively than he ever did in college. So just because a player has a certain amount of hype coming out of the NCAA, you don't know exactly what their ceiling is going to be until you see them in the NHL.
It's Rick Hazar and Jamie Dodd here on Canucks Central. A couple of training camp updates, some notes on there. Still no Michael Ferland. That was kind of expected. The other name that popped up today, no Brandon Sutter. So they're just wrapping up the scrimmage. No involvement from Sutter today. We'll find out more as Travis Green is slated to meet with media in just a little bit. I think Jack Rathbone has to do the car wash first to meet the media. And we'll see with the update. But aside from that, no big news coming out of Canucks training camp so far today.
Yeah, pretty much as we expected. You know, I think the next big news, if we get any, will be if and when Michael Ferland starts to skate and, mm-hmm. and he makes his appearance. That's kind of the next thing I'm waiting for. And I guess the other note we should mention is the ongoing audition for the eighth defenseman spot continued today. Guillaume Brisebois was the guy from the Black Ace group that jumped up and skated with the main group today. So Travis Green still weighing his options about who he wants to take to round out his defense corps there.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. When we talked a lot about Brogan Rafferty yesterday. It's the unexplored potential that intrigues us to say, okay, look, he jumped in there. Does that mean anything? We've seen Brisebois for some time now, and while there's some excitement in the fan base, a very minor group that's like, oh, he could be something. I think we all see the upside of maybe a third pairing kind of guy, whereas Rafferty, it's still unknown to some degree. Maybe at one point, down the road, he's a second pairing guy, but the excitement around him is more about, we don't know.
Yeah, the ceiling is higher with Rafferty, and that's always going to
he's get the mystery box.
Exactly. That's always going to get you more excited, right? The higher ceiling player is the one you want to see. For this specific situation, you know, going to play Minnesota and potentially going on a Stanley Cup run, higher ceiling doesn't necessarily mean he's the right guy for that job. But listen, I want to see him. I want to see him play because he's the most exciting guy. Breezeway, Chatfield, you know, Sautner. To me, their upsides are if they can do what Oscar Fantenberg did for you this year at some point, that's a huge win. Right. If they can be your swing 6-7 defenseman who's solid, doesn't kill you when they're in the lineup, that's a big, big win for those guys. Rafferty, you can reasonably set your sights a lot higher than that.
The inclusion on the roster. So with no Ferland, no Sutter today, there was just straight lines. Louis Erickson featured in with Beagle and Mott. Everything else was pretty much status quo. Vertanen was with Gaudette and Roussel full time. You know the top line, and you know the Horvat, Besser, Pearson line all stuck together. The scrimmage, Louis Erickson scored on a breakaway. Jay Beagle scored, and I think Thatcher Demko played pretty well. So just getting updates from Brendan Batchelor, who, by the way, will join Reach Deep at 2 o'clock, as he will every day, to give you the latest on camp. And then, Team Blue had to do sit-ups and push-ups after the loss.
Jay Beagle and Louis Erickson, let's go. Fourth line. They're going to step up and be the big offense driver in this. I feel it.
We were talking yesterday. It's like those guys, like, this is their first opportunity to kind of live up to their billing. Not necessarily their contracts, but they were sold as veteran players who can keep everyone calm and cool when it comes to, you know, playoff time, high leverage moments. And if they advance, I mean, first they've got to do the play-in round, so there's your opportunity. But if they advance, there is an expectation that they're leaned on to provide that guidance and that veteran leadership in a time of high leverage scenarios.
And it's not just the leadership, though. It's the job they have to do on the ice, right? Like, they were brought in, especially Jay Beagle, not so much Louis Erickson, but Jay Beagle specifically for his experience and for his ability to be a voice in the room. But that, you know, really, when you look at how this roster is constructed, what they need more than anything is they need him to do his job on the ice. They need him to be a shutdown penalty killer. They need him to take big defensive zone draws, get the puck out and change, right? Those are the things they need Jay Beagle to do. The experience factor is important. I don't want to discount it, but if he, you know, the experience won't mean anything if he's not getting his job done on the ice. And the same goes for Louis Erickson, really. Like, if he somehow does find his way into the lineup against the Minnesota Wild, there's a very, very specific role that he's going to be asked to fill. Penalty killing is the number one thing, but also being out there for big defensive zone draws. And I don't think either of those guys, obviously Louis, but not even really Jay Beagle, is ever going to make fans, you know, doing about face on the contract. It's never going to make them look like steals, but they can fill a role. They can do a job and they can help the team.
Nick Nizar and Jamie Dodd. The other news today, we saw the award finalists, Quinn Hughes. We knew Cale Makar. We knew the third person. A lot of people, have campaigned for various people, whether it's Elvis Merzlikins, whether it's Adam Fox, they didn't get in. Dominic Kubalik is the one that gets in, who, look, led all rookies in goals. Fantastic job. But it's kind of stunning how this is just a massive two-horse race, and that guy's season and really a lot of other players just didn't feel like it was going to be up to a standard that Hughes and Makar set.
Yeah, the third spot has really just been the, oh, you know, nice, the happy to be nominated spot, I guess you would call it, right?
Yeah. Like, well, we know today, it's like you're going to be part of a future trivia answer.
Yeah, exactly. But we know, and it's wild, first of all, that the forward, you know, rookie who had led all rookies in goal scoring is just, he was nominated too, but he's not going to win. 100% not going to win. That's a pretty incredible sign of just how good Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes were this year. And, you know, just to connect this back to Jack Rathbone, like, Adam Fox easily could have been the third nominee. I would even suggest maybe he should have been the third nominee.
He would have been my third. I don't get too worked up over awards and
I'm not writing angry letters to the NHL, let's put it that way. But, you know, let's say Adam Fox had been the third. it would have been three defensemen as the nominees and three guys who had come from the NCAA. Don't forget Cale Makar after, you know, going from junior A here, played in the NCAA. So if you're looking for reasons to be bullish on Jack Rathbone, I mean, now more than ever, you have tons of examples of guys coming straight from college hockey and being impact, really, really good players in the NHL.
The three D-men, and it would have been really fascinating. And I think it highlights that where this league is kind of going. It's, you know, we've talked a lot about already during the show that the skill D-men has become pretty in vogue, I guess, to some degree. It used to be niche. Think of like the Ryan Ellis's of 6-7 years ago, Jared Spurgeon. Those guys walked so these new guys can run kind of scenario. And I've always related it to, okay, when the first lockout happened and rule changes and a subtle rule change that we all thought, oh, it's a strategic thing now. You can no longer ice the puck and get off the ice, right? It was the classic D-man move. Just throw it off the glass, icing, you get off, let the next crew go. You got to now make plays with the puck is on your stick and you're under duress, right? And think of that subtle rule change that over the course of 14 years, 15 years, how long it takes for that style of D-man to kind of get phased out of the game and what's the next wave. It's these guys who can now skate and make plays and look at all these intriguing young D-men across the league and still to come in these future drafts. Sat and I were talking about it last week. Look who the first projected D-man is this year. It's Jamie Drysdale, another smallish guy. And we've seen Quinn Hughes, we've seen Rasmus Dahlin, all these guys get drafted high. That's just the way it's going. And I kind of reference it to just that rule change, and it's changed the way that position has to be viewed.
Oh, it absolutely has. It's the rule change is a really interesting point, but I also think, you know, you got to give some credit to the whole notion of advanced stats and analytics in hockey.
Sure,
you know, even if teams like the Canucks are not famous for their embrace of advanced stats, they're not on the forefront of that movement in hockey, but I think it shows just how much that thinking has become commonplace in hockey that even a team like the Canucks recognize, we need a Quinn Hughes in our lineup because, you know, teams might not be quoting, you know, Corsi and Corsi Rel and all these numbers, but the fundamental insight of all those stats is it's good to have the puck. And what these defensemen do is they make you have the puck more. They get the puck and they don't give it away. They don't dump it off the glass. They don't dump it in at the red line. They keep the puck. And teams are just waking up and being and saying, oh yeah, that's really important. We want to have as many guys as possible who help us keep the puck.
Vic Nazar and Jamie Dodd on Canucks Central. Just a programming note, I mentioned Brendan Batchelor will join at 2. I was incorrect in that. Travis Green will be on at 2 o'clock today on Reach Deep, and Murph will be filling in for Brendan Batchelor at 3 o'clock with your training camp update on Reach Deep. The other award today, I did want to touch on this one because I saw some discussion on it, the Jack Adams Award. So John Tortorella got it. We kind of knew that one. Alain Vigneault got a nomination. That's kind of who I think I would vote for the award because what he did this year was so impressive. I just wasn't sure if he was going to get there, but he's in. The third one, I agree with, but I saw a lot of people criticizing it. Bruce Cassidy of the Boston Bruins. Okay. The way I'll phrase this is, remember when JT Miller criticized an opponent and was like, oh, you know, they're an okay team. It was the Boston Bruins. They got worked that night. The Canucks did. But it was the Boston Bruins. And JT Miller's point was pretty valid. When you look at the talent of that team, they've got four, like, exceptional players. But the rest of the roster is, like, a lot of hardworking players. Now, they won the points race this year by 6 points. So a significant margin at the top. Not Tampa Bay level-esque or from last year, obviously, but still a margin. What, like, to me, that speaks to the coaching staff to extract as much talent out of everyone, to have to get everyone to commit to play a certain way. Because that roster, it's not special. Like, if you took the Boston Bruins roster and compared it around the league, man, I'm not even sure if they would finish top 10.
Well, I don't know about that, man. Like, when you have that top line, that puts you at such an advantage.
But the rest of the roster, like the whole roster, like I think you're probably taking Toronto over them. You're probably taking St. Louis. You're probably taking Washington, Tampa. Vegas, Tampa, Edmonton.
I don't think Pittsburgh. I would take Vegas. I wouldn't take Vegas over them. You would take Edmonton's roster? Are you crazy?
You get McDavid and Draisaitl.
Well, they have Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand and David Pastrnak. And then the rest of the roster is better. No way. You're talking the top heavy rosters. That's Edmonton. The rest of Edmonton's roster is a bunch of filler compared to Boston.
What about Winnipeg?
No.
Colorado?
No. You're Colorado maybe, but you're underrating the rest of Boston's roster. Now hold on. Having said that, I agree with you that
it's around 10 then. I'll concede a little bit.
Well, we'll see. But you know, come on. Get out of here with Edmonton. That's crazy. You can't Philly. No. Okay. I would have Boston over. I would take Boston over Philly.
Okay, either way, it's not a top five roster. How about that? Top five?
Sure. I'll agree with that. But the point you're making, I do actually agree with, is that Bruce Cassidy is still a really good coach. And you can't say, oh, he can't be a Jack Adams Award finalist just because they have Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand. We see this across sports where guys who have like superstar level talent just get totally discounted as coaches, or at least discounted when the award voting time comes. Like Bill Belichick should be coach of the year every year in the NFL.
Right?
Every year. He's the best coach. He's the best football coach. He should be coach of the year every year in the NFL. And he's not, because people say, well, he has Tom Brady. Yeah. So who knows? And, Bruce Cassidy's not at that level. He's not Bill Belichick, but he's a really good coach. And just because they have some elite talent to work with, you can't discount that.
650, your thoughts. We should say you got one more chance to get it to Game of Takes. Just tweet us at Sportsnet 650. We are asking for your proposal, like your GM for a day, your proposal of how to get through the Canucks cap situation. You will be taken on Jeremy Barraby on Twitter at Air Dr. Funk. And hopefully you walk away a winner and get to sit atop the composite throne, but you got to tweet in your take first, and then we'll ask you to join us, at Sportsnet 650 or text in 650-650. I'm looking forward to this one because there's been a lot of talk these last 2 weeks once the CBA got, we got close to the closing stages of when we would see what the season would look like in the economic landscape. There's been a lot of talk about what to do. What is your solution? I think we'll lay out ours. We've done a little bit throughout this week, but let's lay out ours tomorrow, and then we'll get to the two takes that we hear tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. I like that we're branching out a little bit in Game of Takes. We've done a lot of binary, kind of yes or no, pro or con questions. I like this one. A little more open. You can get creative. I'm excited to hear what people come up with.
I want someone to do the all-rookie lineup. Just be like, Hoglander, Rathbone, Rafferty. Everyone's in.
Figure out a way to get Pekulzin over. Let's go. Let's do it.
Cole Lind. He was at camp. Why not just also on the team next year? A lot more to come up today on the program. You hear me and Andrew Walker and Sat Shaw. We got Jeff Merrick coming up at 4:35. Patrick Johnson, Canucks Insider, at 5 o'clock. But as mentioned, Reach Deep Dan Riccio, Ran Deep Janda on the way. Hear from Travis Green at 2 o'clock here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.